This is 98.1 FM Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi o Whangaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have Michael Joseph Ferguson, all the way from the other side of the Pacific Rim. Michael, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, awesome, man. So I was introduced to your work from a friend where she was basically schooling me on a different perspective of what adult ADHD is. And she mentioned your podcast, and from your podcast, I learned that you wrote a book. And yeah, I was just fascinated from what I was hearing. And I'm so happy that you decided to come on. And I'd like to share your perspective. You know, to me, it's a unique perspective, and it rings true in reality in my own personal experience. And there was something before we get into that, something on your website that I saw. You speak about having an holistic approach, and I'm all about that holistic lifestyle. I just wanted to know, for you, what does it mean to have an holistic approach to adult ADHD?
Yeah, so there's so many components to ADHD that it's helpful to have, as you mentioned, the Hunter Farmer theory, it's helpful to have a metaphor. People like metaphors and stories versus like, we don't sit around reading science manuals unless we're a scientist. So we like having metaphors. So from a holistic perspective, what I found from coaching, I had adopted that methodology many years prior. But when I started doing coaching work, what I found was if I can get a full picture of a person's life and all the different factors that are happening in their life, then I'm more able to support them. And oftentimes ADHD gets minimized into something very simplistic. And it's okay, this is a brain problem. We need to do X, Y, and Z to fix it. Whereas what I find is that people who would identify themselves as ADHD or diagnosed with ADHD are much more complicated. And so to be able to look at all the different factors that go into someone's life, you're much more able to make progress in terms of support towards being more productive, more happy, more fulfilled. And so to me, holistic is just a practical approach. It seems to work better in terms of getting people to quicker to a space where they're feeling satisfied, because they went into looking for a diagnosis or hearing about ADHD because they were having some problem. They weren't having a problem, they wouldn't have gotten a diagnosis or searched that out.
Yeah, I mean, that rings true for me. And it's, you know, in Western medicine, it's the reductionist approach where the brain's over there and the guts over here and your lifestyle's over there, but really they're all connected, they're all one flowing mechanism, they're all part of your life cycle and your life. And yeah, it makes a lot of sense of what you're talking about. Now, the Hunter Farmer hypothesis, this, when I first heard about that, I was like, whoa, you know, it really blew my mind. And from that, you have this term hunter type. Can you go into that? What is this regarding adult ADHD?
Yeah, so this came from, this is not mine. So Tom Hartman was the one that originally came up with it in 92, I believe. So he wrote a book called ADHD, A Different Perception. And he postulated that perhaps people who are ADHD are the benefactors of a gene that has been passed down from generation to generation. So we know that ADHD in most cases is hereditary. And so the basic theory is that up until 10,000 years ago, all of our ancestors were hunter-gatherers. Okay, that we know. And then about 10,000 years ago, agriculture came into the mix and it shifted how survival worked. So if you were a hunter-gatherer, your perception of time and how you survived was very specific. So you had to be in the moment. You had to be distractible. So you'd have to, if you're on the hunt, you're scanning the environment, right? You have to tune into all these different things that may be happening in your environment. You work in bursts. So instead of working in long days, the hunt usually lasted maybe a couple hours. Sometimes it was even shorter. And then you come back and you relax and you'd be with the tribe and you hang out. That's in most hunter-gatherer cultures, that even going on to today, that's what happens. And the time horizons are minutes and seconds, right? So if you're on the hunt, everything is about this moment. And so hyper-focus is one of those key pieces. So with those, when you take that and move those genes into the modern world, you can see kids sitting and being restless and being distractible and zoning out, looking out the window, like all the things that we would think of as ADHD, perhaps are this these genetics. Now, if you think on the other side of it, farmers had a totally different way of survival. They had to have long-term thinking. They did a lot of repetitive tasks day in and day out. And the time horizon is months and years. So most of what we consider modern culture was designed by farmer types. And so this is sort of, that's sort of the mix. And so hunter types tend to be more creative. That we tend to be more into things that are stimulating to us. So, and we're out of the box kind of thinkers. So that tends to be, so the metaphor, and so the way I look at it, this is, I don't think of it as a scientific theory, because you can argue back and forth and like, oh, well, this study says this, and people will argue back and forth on whether or not this is actually scientifically accurate. But it's a perfect metaphor, because you can, what I've done is extended the metaphor and say, okay, if you were a hunter gatherer, you would also need, you probably have a high protein, low carb diet. We know that from modern hunter gatherer cultures. We know that you would exercise and movement is really important. So that also carries that metaphor forward. So the way I look at it is I coined the term hunter type. So I combine the term, you know, hunter farmer theory with seeing ADHD as a neurological type and not a disorder. So when you shift that focus a little bit, people are much more able to get on board and not feel like, oh, I'm broken. I'm, there's some part of me that's not, you know, working properly. It's that I have a very specific neurological type, and I'm good at certain things, and in other things I have challenges with, just like everybody else.
Yeah, there's a difference between a disease where your body's out of balance physiologically versus a type, like you say with ADHD. I don't believe your body's out of balance physiologically. It's just, I don't know why have they, do you have a theory why this label has been given as a diagnostic disease and health symptom?
Well, I think it came from a lot of, you know, it's very well meaning. There's kids that really struggled in school, and then they would get out of school. And also what goes in with this package is addiction, more prone to distractibility, and also getting caught by stimuli. So the other side of this is pretty dark. So it's understandable that we want to identify this and support people in getting what they need. But there's many ways you can approach the same thing so that that person does not feel less than or broken in some way.
Yeah. You know, there's also different, like this is one type, and there's like different sensitivities. Like I call myself a highly sensitive person, so I'm more sensitive to energies in a room, whereas most people or some people won't, you know, be able to sense those things. And yet when it comes to teaching children or with adults in the workplaces, those types of our personality aren't accounted for, which is a shame. You know, it's all part of who we are, and it's good that you're raising this awareness around different types of being and personality and this hunter type. But yeah, it really resonates with me. And you talk about those strengths and challenges of being a hunter type in your podcast, and you've mentioned it already. This one that, hyper-focus. How is it a strength and a challenge? Can you go into that?
Yeah. So a common, and I work with a lot of people who are creative professionals. I'd say that's sort of our specialty in a sense. That's at least who I geared it towards when I wrote the book, Drummer in the Great Mountain. Yeah. So the hyper-focus is I'll stay up all night focusing on a creative task, like just tuning everything else out, often to the detriment of my, you know, sleep and other things, right? So that was a pattern for me for many years. Mm. So on the plus side of that, I got really good at certain things. And so people who are wired this way, especially if they can take care of their health, which maybe we'll talk about a bit of like some health tips around it.
Yeah.
You can maximize that skill to be like dive deep into something and really master a certain skill. That's a very common trait for people wired this way. As I go through and especially people who are a little older that have spent some time, a lot of them have taken a lot of time in a creative profession, and they'll just go all the way in. But on the downside of that, that's not always balanced. So to be able to counteract that with finding a way to recognizing that as a both strength as well as a something that can really, you know, tweak your body and then lead you down roads where you're like, okay, now I'm exhausted. Now I need caffeine. Now I need X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And it throws you out of balance. So that's the two sides of hyperfocus.
some of the other challenges as well. You mentioned that, as soon as I heard about them, I was like, yep, that's me. It's completing mundane, non-stimulating tasks,
yes.
Which I believe is related to being disorganized.
That's the classic, I mean, yes.
If you look around my room, you know, there's a few things on the floor that shouldn't be on the floor. But yeah, it's just that I've got other things that I'm quite focused on. But then another challenge is being caught by stimuli. So my mind goes there, then it goes there.
Yes. Yes. It's not easy. I mean, that's the thing. It's like the people, there's a certain level of respect, I think, for people that are wired this way, that some things that would seem very simple for other people to do are excruciating for us. You know, doing taxes, doing mundane paperwork. It's like, it's painfully hard to do it. And so we have to develop methods and support systems to make those things happen, because they're not calling our attention. If you think like you're on the hunt, this is all stuff that's fluff. It's in your brain is not prioritizing it as this is urgent. Therefore, it's much harder to move the energy towards getting those tasks done. And so what works and what I recommend is finding the times a day when certain tasks are easier for you to do. So for most people, those kinds of tasks, mundane tasks, are usually better in the morning. And then afternoon and evening are, that's more the creative, the things that more draw you in more easily, or you're engaging with other people, move those towards later in the day, in the evening. Try to get at least a couple of days a week where you're focusing. When you find your peak time for that kind of focus happens in the morning.
Yeah, it's so true. Also, like you can have issues with in relationship. Like when I could be in the middle of a conversation, something will catch my eye, and then I'll just talk about it, and while the other person's still talking, yes. Oh, did you see? And then they were like, "Hello, I was talking to you." It's like, "Oh, I didn't quite mean to."
Yes,
it's just it can be quite overwhelming as well.
It can, and so the ways that there's the piece around this is that we have to deal with our brain chemistry in some way. So what they find is that we have, from the latest research that I've seen, is one of the factors that makes us who we are is we have less dopamine receptors. And so that leaves us kind of restless and distractible. That's sort of at the core of the brain chemistry. But what can counteract that is regular cardio exercise. So what I recommend is like 10 to 15 minutes a day, small amount. It doesn't have to be a large amount to get the benefit of it. Higher protein, low carb diet, because you're feeding the brain, you're giving it what it needs. The brain wants amino acids, especially L-tyrosine. And so if you're eating a higher protein diet, and you can be a vegetarian. I was vegetarian for many years, only recently started eating fish. So you can start adjusting your brain chemistry by doing those things, as well as reducing processed foods, refined sugar, artificial preservatives, colorings. All those have, studies have shown that those exacerbate ADHD symptoms. So you can dial it in. Now, obviously, medication is out there. We all know about that. Medication is out there. I'm not anti-medication, but what I encourage people to do is try out some of the physical body hacks first and see if that makes a difference. Just because you get the extra benefit of being a healthier person, you're exercising more, you're eating, like the diet that I recommend is what is considered, a healthy diet, especially if you're diabetic or whatever. It's, it's just a healthy diet, but you were adding a little more protein. So the amino acids that you're taking in through the protein are feeding your brain, as well as like things like fish oil can be really helpful in giving your brain what it needs so it's functioning optimally.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. There's a book by, what's her name? Dr. Anna Lemke called Dopamine Nation, and she talks about dopamine fasting.
Yes. Yeah.
No, that's true. I mean, your lifestyle choices will determine your hormonal balance, and that goes from cortisol to melatonin and to the neurotransmitters as well. Everything you do will affect the physiology, and it's a shame we're not taught that at a more younger age.
Yeah, I think in little pockets, it's happening more and more. I think meditation is becoming more mainstream, definitely since I started, 25, 30 years ago. Like, it's way more in the zeitgeist now. And meditation has many beneficial effects for people with ADHD. So the big thing is anxiety. What they know about when I wrote the book, I did a lot of research on addiction brain science. And so I carried a lot of that over into ADHD because there was a lot of crossover. And what we find is that when people are stressed, their cortisol level goes up. And then the brain thinks, okay, our old brain, deep in our brain, this old part of our brain goes, okay, what in the environment can stimulate some dopamine so that I can lower the cortisol? Because it's not healthy for your physical body to have so much cortisol going through it. It's detrimental to the body. So it creates the craving for whatever that substance or behavior is that stimulates dopamine. And a lot of times that's not a very healthy mechanism. So to be able to focus on meditation and reducing your anxiety, reducing the stress consciously has the extra benefit of greater focus, but also you're less distractible because part of that distractibility is coming from you feeling stressed. So you have a task coming up. This task feels overwhelming, especially if it's like a mundane task. Okay, now I'm stressed and I'm going to sit on watch Facebook or do anything other than that task. And it's usually going to be distracting you towards something that's going to give you a little dopamine hit.
Yeah. I mean, just when I hear that word mundane, it causes me to shut up.
Exactly.
Would you add nature time or being in nature as an important lifestyle choice for us hunter types?
Huge. Yeah. In fact, I've reached out to a number of outdoor specialists and talking, and even like Richard Louv's work, Last Child in the Woods. Like, there's so many benefits for us hunter types to be out in nature. That's what I encourage on my podcast: is don't just go exercise. Go find a place that you really love to go to. Especially if you don't like exercise that much, find a place that's going to really nourish you, so that you're going to be excited to get out every day and go to that place. And maybe you exercise for a little bit, and then you have a walk. You have some time to like clear your head. Because when we're in nature, we're not looking at man-made stuff. We're not looking at angles. We're not looking at, as soon as we engage with man-made things, it tends to kick in our judgmental mind. And we start to think in terms of, you know, concepts versus when you're in nature, it goes beyond that. Nature connection, and like the work of John Young specifically, he does a lot of amazing work in this field. It triggers deeper parts of our brain. And I think for us hunter types, we become more effective when we get more nature time. And I think from my understanding, they've done studies of successful CEOs, and they found a lot of them as children were out. They spent a lot of time with unsupervised time out in nature. Like, there wasn't a lot of parents hovering around them saying, okay, don't do that. You're going to jump here. Oh, no. To give them like free rein to get out and move around. I think as adults, we need that time out of time. So we're not looking at our phones. We're actually in nature, and we're opening our senses up to things that we used to need to do. Back in the day, our senses would need to be much stronger in terms of tuning into our environment. When you study the sun, Bushmen, and the Kalahari, they have almost supernatural powers. And it's because they have to. They live in nature. These are their survival skills. But we have those abilities too. They've just gone dormant as we become more indoor dwellers and staring at our computer screens. And so we're missing out on key pieces of our biology, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I had depression for quite a long time, and the one thing that would help with that was being in nature. And I think you'll find when you go into cities or concrete jungles, or even just in suburbia or your home, when you're surrounded by these angles and square things, it's sort of your body and your mind takes on those concepts and you feel boxed. Whereas when you're in nature, there's no boundary, there's no border, and everything's flowing, and you sort of open up as well. Well, that's what I find for myself. Everything just moves and my mind moves, so the thoughts don't linger.
Yes, that's it. And I think we're all so much of the mental, when I work with people, I see so much of the mental health problems come from just not getting outside. Getting out into nature. I mean, luckily I had that. I was raised in a concrete jungle, kind of. I mean, in suburbs of LA. But as soon as I got out and specifically started running at the beach, that's my thing of going to the beach and going barefoot and running on the beach. I did it right before our interview today.
Nice.
And it just opens me up. I feel much clearer. I'm happier. My mood's better. Depending on the weather, I'm getting more sun. So that's affecting my sleep in a positive way. There's so many benefits. And it's just it's how we lived for tens of thousands of years. The way we live now is unnatural. just by definition. So, and we're just because of it, there's depression and anxiety and all these other pieces that I feel strongly can greatly be reduced with more nature time.
Yeah, there's the term evolutionary mismatch, where our genes are expecting a certain environment,
yep.
Because we're not in that environment, we're turning on and off, or we're turning off healthful genes and turning on genes that shouldn't be switched on. If I'm talking about the epigenetics here.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and for me, my church, I call it, is just it's a local bushwalk here in Raglan. So when I tell people, oh, I'm going to church, that just means I'm going for my half-hour walk in the bush, surrounded by the trees, and yeah, I mean, it's so soothing, so soothing.
That's it. Sounds beautiful. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand. It's on my bucket list. So I'm looking, nice, especially now that I know we have quite a few people that we've connected with and I work with in New Zealand. So
yeah,
it's on my list.
We'd love to have you. Love to have you. Now, one of the things you talk about as well that's quite important is life visioning or creating, yes, your why. Did you want to speak to that?
Yeah. So a couple times a year we do our live online workshops, and that's the first session is talking about life visioning. And I think if we don't have a vision for what we want to have happen, then we get the default. So over time, what I found is, especially for people wired the way we're wired, is it's not something we do once a year, once every 2 years, which is important. Mm-hmm. You should definitely do it that way. But doing it on a biweekly basis, asking yourself, what are you wanting right now? What's your why right now? And to be able to keep coming back to that and tuning into what is the thing that I most care about? Because especially making shifts where you haven't, maybe you're someone that hasn't ate well for a long time, or maybe you don't like getting outside, or maybe you don't like exercise, but you want to feel better and you have maybe creative projects you want to do, then you need that why. You want to have the carrot to get you towards the thing you want. And part of that means just like, what's the carrot to get you to take care of yourself better? So to me, it's if you can't visualize it, you won't go after it. And many of us get lost in anxiety, self-doubt. And so to be able to pull that back and say, okay, let's just pretend as though you could write your script. What does that look like? And what I found for myself is, that's how I got to where I'm at. Like there's so many decisions that I made based on me taking the time to say, what is it that I want? And sometimes you're not totally clear about how to get there, but at least say, so what I do with our workshops is I say, replace the word goal, because goal is kind of an overwhelming term for many of us, because we got it in school and we feel like we never reach those goals. Replace that word goal with what I'm wanting. And that's easier, because then you can say, well, I always know what I want, or I have an idea of what I want. And so for me, a lot of when I work with coaching clients, it's about how do we find a way around some of these terms like goal setting that may have brought us a lot of shame and guilt and frustration because we weren't able to, quote unquote, live up to our expectation. But if we can shift that around and ask yourself, what are you wanting? Then you can move towards it.
I talk about having a dream. So it's A, B, C, D, but backwards, starting with dream. And then you get clarity on creating steps and action items to get you toward that dream. You can call them goals or steps. And then the B is having self-beliefs, like believing that you can actually do what you've set out in front of you. And that's one key thing that I think is missing in a lot of people's life, is that self-belief, self-worth, knowing that you can do this, that you deserve this. It's true. Like, you got to believe that you can do this. Otherwise, you're going to find it quite a struggle. And this is where building a tribe around you is really important, because if you're finding it difficult to believe in yourself and you've got that supportive tribe around you, they'll help inspire that belief back and nurture and grow it inside of you. And the last step is just taking the action, finally putting everything you've laid out in front of you, taking those steps and being practical, taking action. And yeah, so that's how I talk about it. So yeah, that's great that you bring that up.
Love it. That I can agree 100%.
And that's more of a long-term thing. You have this idea, which I'm thinking is more short-term, like in the moment, this intending process. Can you share that? I really love this.
Oh, yeah. So I talked to, well, that's, I think these are for a number of years, I lived on Kauai, the island of Kauai, and I had a lot of really interesting friends. And so I feel like I was very blessed to have a tribe that I felt connected to. And we would get together on a regular basis and have an intending circle and just state, what are we intending for this week? Both from the metaphysical perspective, but what I found to be as important is just asking yourself, what are you wanting? How do you want this to happen today? How do you want your day to unfold? If you don't state that consciously, you get the default. And so to me, I've turned that into a regular practice. It's asking myself throughout the day, even before our interview today, set an intention for how I want the interview to go. Because often the default is not what you want. The default is usually self-judgment, whatever it is. So if you take that extra breath throughout the day and say, how do I want this next section of my day to go? It's more likely for that to happen. If you just go through the day with no form of ritual to state, like, I'm transitioning from this to this, how do I want this next part of my day to go? Then you usually get the default. And so to me, it's very practical.
Yeah, and the default is whatever life has sort of planned for you, but you can sort of plan around what life has planned. And it comes down to focus and attention, because where your attention, you know, is where everything around you and your energy, and you'll pick up on that attention. What I mean by that is, if you're buying a new car, you suddenly see that car everywhere because that's where your focus and attention is.
Yes.
So if you set this intention process, everything around your intention, you will see, and everything else will just fall by the wayside. But if you don't have that intention, everything, you'll either see everything or see nothing, and you'll be missing out on those opportunities.
That's it. Yeah, that's a, and it's just sort of putting yourself back into the driver's seat. I mean, I think it's a kind of a co-creation, and from a metaphysical perspective, I think of it as a co-creation with the universe. So it's like, things will happen and I have to adapt to situations always, you know, that's always going to happen. But the more I steer the ship in the direction I want it to go, the more likely it will go in that direction. And I think going back to the ADHD hunter type thing, is that many of us have a challenge because we failed in the past. Things haven't worked out the way we wanted. And so there's a lot of shame and guilt that we have to overcome. And often we have to shift those thought patterns and those grooves. So doing exercises like intending, setting intention for how you want it to go, is part of the way you shift your brain function. It's how you're looking at the world. You have to consciously say, no, I no longer want to think this way. I want to lean my thinking towards in this direction. And then after a while, that becomes the default.
Yeah. And it's not just your brain. It's your entire nervous system. It's your heart. It's your gut.
Yes.
It's your entire being. You're just turning your whole perspective toward what it is you want. And yeah, I mean, I think that is a big blind spot today. I mean, that was a big blind spot for me when I was going through depression and my issues with my gut. There was just so much I didn't know was available, because I only saw one way. And that's why I like doing the show and having people like you on, because there's another way to see the world and another way of being. And for all of us who have this hunter type, yeah, this is another way of seeing yourself as not broken, but as whole, but just needing to raise awareness around all the different parts of who you are.
Yes, absolutely. And then how do we interface with the rest? Because we still have to interface with other people. So we find our ways to maintain our dignity and self-respect, and at the same time, handle the mundane tasks, do the things we need to do that will also move our life forward.
Yeah. Do you believe it's a spectrum? Like, do you believe everyone has a bit of this? Like, you know, there's, like, for example, narcissistic disorder, but then I believe we all have a little bit of traits, or maybe we have moments of being narcissistic. Do you think everyone has this hunter type in them?
Yes, although I've definitely met people who've had almost zero.
Wow.
I've seen people that are very, very regimented. And and it, sometimes that's cultural too. I mean, you can think of, if this is genetic, then it gets passed down by, you know, who's the more attractive person in that particular tribe. That's, you know, the genes get spread. So if the culture really supports a certain personality type, then that gene's going to get passed down more likely than not. So I've definitely met people that are very, very low on the spectrum, but it is definitely a spectrum, no doubt.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there anything else you wanted to share?
I think the big thing that I most care about is giving people a especially if they feel like they've been struggling or they kind of resonate with a lot of the things when you hear the symptoms of ADHD, is to find ways to take care of yourself, to carry your dignity with you, so you recognize yourself as a whole being instead of someone who has this thing that you're broken now. Now I got to fix it in some way. See if there's another approach. And then just from our work, if you want to learn more about us, you can go to drummerinthegreatmountain.com. That's where you'll find the podcast and the book, Drummer in the Great Mountain, and our workshops. And we also have a free assessment quiz on there if you want to get a non-medical diagnosis of being a hunter type. It's definitely, I would not call it a medical diagnosis, but if you want to get it, it'll ask you a series of questions and it'll give you a score and you'll give a sense of like, oh, okay, here's where I might sit on the spectrum.
That's great. Your podcast is great. You've done so many shows. I was trying to get through them before I talked to you about it. There's no way that I was going to catch up in time. But yeah, now I'm glad I came across your work. And I just want to say thank you very much for the work that you're doing. It's helped me see myself or parts of myself that I never saw before, and having more acceptance for that part of myself that I thought maybe I, you know, why am I different? Why can't I do what other people do? And it's a lot more easier for me to see how I can connect to others who are just like me as well. And that includes my, you know, I've got a nephew who I've been trying to help sometimes, and he's always moving, you know, and some people are telling him to stand still. And I realize, no, he needs to move. He needs to be able to get his mind and his body in motion in order to accept what's coming toward him. And yeah, that makes total sense from your work.
Oh, thank you. I love hearing that. I love hearing what you're doing too. It's exciting to just hear your perspective on things.
Oh, cool, man. Thanks. Yeah, and if you ever do come to New Zealand, look us up. And yeah, hope to see you in Raglan.
Love it. Sounds great.
Okay, mate. Cheers, and have a good rest of your day. Take care.
You as well. Take it easy.
Thanks once again, Michael, for coming on. I really enjoyed that chat. I highly recommend his podcast. It's Adult ADHD, ADD Tips and Support, and also his book, The Drummer in the Great Mountain, a guidebook to transforming adult ADD, ADHD, and ADHD time management. Great resources if you've been given a diagnosis of ADHD, or resources for anyone who's finding themselves quite distractible. And to my hunter type brothers and sisters and children out there, you do not have a disorder or disease. You are not broken. You have a specific way of sensing, feeling, thinking, and acting in the world. It's not a disability that you need to put up with and manage with drugs. It's a superpower. It really is. And you can harness this and live by it and make the most of it for yourself first, and then you can share your gift with the world. So stay focused, stay balanced, stay on your path, stay true to who you are. And to everybody, until next time, stay free, be yourself. Know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.